Welcome to another Distinct Nostalgia by MIM.
Brought to you in partnership with Life Rooms and Merseycare NHS Foundation Trust. Staying well, staying home.
Generations of children from the late 60s through to the late 90s share something in common when it comes to television. Most of them will have been required to watch a series called How We Used to Live as part of their history lessons. For some, it was the only history teaching they got, and for many others, it was the best history teaching they got. Well, the creator and long-time writer of the series, which spanned decades, from the Victorian period through to the mid to late 20th century, is Frieda Kelsall. And long before the lockdown came into force, MIM's Ashley Byrne spent a wonderful afternoon in Frieda's company at her home in the Pennines. Let those memories come flooding back.
All right, so I'm delighted to be here with Frieda Kelsall, who was basically the main writer, or the creator, weren't you, of How We Used to Live?
Yes, I think you could call me partially that anyway, because yeah. I had some very jolly clients and colleagues who were on the same aim, to right. make history live.
Yes.
And to make it so that you could approach it if you were a child by listening at the keyhole, thinking I could be in that room facing that problem or enjoying that bit of fun.
Now, How We Used to Live was a schools programme.
Yes.
It would be on when I was watching it, and I'm in my mid-40s now, it would be on around about 11:40 in the morning till about midday, if I remember rightly. We used to sit there as 9, 10, 11-year-olds, cross-legged. The TV would have two big doors on it, which would open. We'd sit there looking up at this big screen, and we'd be very attentive for 20 minutes. It was only 20 minutes, but it was... It was great. It was fun. It was our sort of our little soap opera, really. Did you realise what impact you were having on all these children?
Yes, because I was sitting cross-legged on the floor with them half the time. If it was going to be shown, I found a school that was going to take it on board and drop in at 11:30, have a cup of coffee, go and sit cross-legged on the floor with the children and see how it goes down. And it was great fun because they did laugh when I wanted them to. And they were very interested and moved and excited and frightened a bit. You know, sometimes when I rather hope they might be. And I thought, yes, I know it costs more to produce history as drama, but isn't it worth it?
Well, that's the other thing about it, really. There wasn't much drama around. Yes, there were children's programmes that did a bit of drama here and there. But in schools, a lot of the schools' programmes tended to be quite prescriptive, quite sort of talking down to the kids kind of thing. Whereas this was treating kids as intelligent, wasn't it? It was saying... Yes, you might be 8, 9, 10-year-old, but you can understand to an extent what happened in the 1930s or 40s or whatever without us patronising you.
I think that's probably what made it work, because I know that most of the children were able to identify with at least one of the characters. And if their older brothers were in two or three forms higher, they would be identifying with another of the characters, and the show could go on when they got home for tea, as long as Mum played her part and she was able to explain things that they hadn't quite understood. But it made them feel real and part of those families. And the families I tried to make as attractive and not necessarily rich, but certainly figuring largely in their local community. Okay. So that they could go out and taste what everybody was doing and approve it or not approve it, enjoy it, make friends with people of another generation. I think it's quite a lot of, in my day anyway, I'm writing in some periods of what I remember.
Yeah.
So it was quite interesting to try and recreate that atmosphere.
Now, the revelation to me has been how long it went on for, because I think of it as being one of the school's programmes I watched, and then I find out that people 10 years older than me also watched it, and people 10 years younger than me also watched it as well. How long did How We Used to Live go on for?
1968 until about 1998, but then there were repeats, and then there was, because of the national curriculum mainly, otherwise it might be still going now, but with new episodes, of course, and new periods of history, there's a limit to what you can dramatise on location in terms of period. I mean, you can have Victorians just if you manage to get rid of the street signs and things like that. But to have a period that's stretched and has many things happening, you can obviously repeat the time scale. You can repeat 1908 to 1945 quite easily, because so much else happened apart from what you've highlighted in your 20 episodes.
So let's go back to 1968 then. This was the year that Yorkshire Television, who produced it, began in Leeds. Just a bit of education for people listening who don't know. Before then, Granada TV covered the whole of the north of England, and then they split it up so that Yorkshire TV had its own franchise. And so Yorkshire TV was very, very keen at that time to stamp its mark in terms of programming. It was making comedy after comedy after comedy, drama after drama after drama. And obviously, it was keen on doing things for children and for schools as well. So how was How We Used to Live born, as it were?
Well, it was more a documentary with a contemporary presenter, very smart usually, perhaps a lady wearing twin set and pearls. And they would go to museums, which were expanding in a rather creative way themselves, because they could become the setting for the documentary and people could be shown things, which is what television's about.
So it started off as a documentary, basically.
Definitely, yeah. Yes, yes. And I think I was called in once because they were short of a script. And I had to write one in a hurry. And I thought, oh, it's about shopping. Well, what happens when people go shopping? They have stories to tell, or there are reasons why they're buying what they want. And can they afford it? Or are they so very rich that they get a seat offered to them and don't have to pay at all because it's all on the account? And then I thought, well, I have a bit of a crooked shopkeeper who puts a glob of something heavy under the scales when he's weighing things out so that everything actually looks heavier than it is. And he's shortchanging all his customers. So I had a bit of a villain and a very poor sweet girl who wanted some sweets and she hadn't got enough money, or she wanted something to take for, I think it was also somebody who was poorly. Another shopkeeper gave her a bit of leeway on that one. And then the housekeeper for the rich family, we never saw them, but I thought, wouldn't it be nice to go home with her and see the rich family and how they comport themselves? And about 4 years later, that particular family was born into television. And it was a doctor's family and they were quite well off.
Yes.
And Joanne Whalley played the daughter quite marvellously. She was only mid to late teens and she played 12 up to 28, which was pretty good going. And so you were able to liaise with this character's development over all that period of her life between September and March. I think her skills were honed pretty nicely at an early age.
So when it first started and it became a drama, did you envisage that it would go on for so long? I mean, what was the original plan for it?
I don't think there was an original plan, because it obviously depended on the departmental decisions and budgets and whether people could find all those jobs and fill them. And it was actually something that broke new ground at Yorkshire Television. They had marvellous drama. I'd written straight drama after the first two or three years of working on How We Used to Live. But this one was something that it could always have more resources. They could always find it. And they were very good at finding what we needed. I had no idea it would keep going so long. And especially when the national curriculum told everybody what they had to do. It was one of those things where the subjects were already carved up and shaped. And if you wanted to diversify with drama and explore a topic like just how difficult it was to be elderly and go into the workhouse when you've been together as an elderly married couple all your life. That was a stormer. That was the one that, I think he got an award. And quite a few of them went up for awards. But that was such a sad one to write, because we knew them and we had an affection for these two. And there was, I think, a shot that we put in just towards the end, and it still gives me goose pimples, was when the couple were in the workhouse and they walked up the corridor and embraced, and she went left and he went right. And I'm getting goose pimples now just remembering it. And that was the elderly couple who spent all their married life together raising a family, and that was what happened to them at the end.
People who are listening now who remember it will also have goose pimples with you, I'm sure. So just looking back then, how many... You know, the era I think, I'm just looking at your books there, you've got, it says 1936, 1953. That's the one I remember. But there were others, weren't there? How many eras did How We Used to Live cover?
I think altogether it was only about five. But because we took them at different slants and started at different times and had a different focus, we overlapped sometimes. So I had the same one to do again, slightly differently. With the end of the war, the 1914-18 war, I hadn't managed to get women's suffrage in, so we were able to go back and do things again.
Yes.
That had not been featured. Also, I think because we had a slightly different family, their experience would be different from the family that we'd portrayed in roughly the same era. I think the last ones of the series, and I wasn't really much to do with it by the 90s, I was working on it, but I think decisions were being taken about other forms of entertaining children. But this was where, after the national curriculum, there had to be some firm topic of celebrities of that era. Yeah. I think one was Stevenson. So it was much more like a single slot play.
Do you think the national curriculum killed it off then?
It's hard to say, really. I think probably it was trying to make some sort of sense out of qualifications, and the qualifications had to register up and down the country. I know that the whole series was watched from Scotland to Cornwall and back because of where we got letters from, and I had some amazing correspondence sometimes with people telling me their granddad's life story, which is wonderful.
Yes, yes.
So I sometimes used it.
I mean, what was interesting about it for me was that, and I think probably for a lot of kids who watched it, was that you were connected to it through this family. It was like a soap opera, really. So the history was part of it, obviously, but because you watched it on a regular basis, you got to care about the families and the kids in it and the parents and everybody. You wanted to know what was going to happen to them. So when it came to me realising there were other Howie Easterlives other than this one, I'd look at it and think, no, that's not how that's not my how he used to live. Yeah. People have probably got an attachment to their particular era, haven't they?
I think they might well have thought, because they belonged to that and they had listened heartily for every episode, and when something came out perhaps the following September, this term opened, and they were in different clothes, they weren't even the same people, you know, and they were slightly different time. I think it also, as it moved on, it was easier to go backwards, to be honest, than it was to write the next layer. I think when they said it was going to be 1953 to 1970, and I thought, that's not history. That's when I was, you know, alive and starting work, and all, you know, I was doing things. And the history is when it's all over.
Again, what was good for me was that I had a good rapport with my grandparents, so I'd know a lot about things that happened way, way back. And at primary school and middle school, yes, I did get some general knowledge of the First World War and Second World War, and we used to come to school and bring various items that our grandparents would give us to have a look at. You know, it might be an old posser, or it could be anything you'd look at and talk about, and that would be done around how we used to live the TV programme, which was fantastic. Mm. And I learnt a lot through how we used to live and through those particular classes in middle school. But I have to say, after that, in secondary school, my history teaching was appalling. There was hardly anything. I learnt more from Yorkshire TV and from your writing, I have to say, than I did from anything I had learned at secondary school.
Well, I think there's much to be said, too, for how the teachers took it on board. I think many teachers were really enjoying their life when it came to teaching history through these families and the storylines and the way they could talk with the children, because there's generally something they could discuss and have different opinions about. Like, should she go and be a housemaid? Cleaning other people's stairs for them and never getting a chance to read a book because she had to get up early and go to bed late. I mean, the things that they were caring about because they cared for these characters. Mm-hmm. But in terms of whether or not it would last through other systems nowadays, I think it probably wouldn't. I mean, would they be able to stop long enough to have a discussion about something? I think people following a soap opera, maybe, yes, it does have that effect that you want to know what happens next because you've got friendly with them and they are part of your life. And I was very fond of all my characters, and even the stoppy ones. But if there's a bonding with the children watching, I mean, I noticed it. I was sitting cross-legged on the floor, as you say. And
it's always cross-legged. Why were we always sat cross-legged? What was that about?
Well, I don't know. It just seemed the right thing to do. But they were very much intrigued, and they would nudge each other if there's anything that they wanted to talk about in the playground afterwards. And I could feel them getting, you know, more and more attached and more involved. Mind you, it hadn't happened after 15 minutes. I thought there was something wrong here. Because I didn't like to feel that they were not linked in together as a collective or as individuals.
We're talking a minute about what you did, how you actually set about doing these. But the programmes themselves covered, as you say, a vast time frame. The one that I watched, 1936 to 1953, that's nearly 20 years of history in there. And it didn't balk at covering serious issues. So it wasn't just the light and fluffy side of a family and what they were going through. You had the hard, serious stuff coming in there. There was a little bit of politics occasionally as well, just to tell people what was going on. And I think you had the fabulous voice, didn't you? Was it Redvers Kyle?
Yes.
Doing the announcements the official announcements as to what happened.
Yes.
I mean, that was wonderful. I mean, he had such a rich voice, didn't he?
The early ones had some news coverage adapted into the programme as a kind of trailer to this is what's coming. So you could use black and white film of whatever the topic was. I mean, this one that you were talking about, you may remember, for topics, home comforts, domestic budgets, leisure, medical services, had to pay. Well, how many people realised that everybody had to pay? evacuation. Oh, why is that? Because there's a war. The ARP and air raids. And then GIs, we've got Americans coming to live in our house. Joe Podemski, he was a corporal, and he came to live in our house and sat on the cat. And that sort, you know, I remember that very well as you watch.
I caught the evacuees episode on YouTube recently, actually. Yeah, yeah. And it's the one where they all sing Run, Rabbit, Run at the beginning, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. And then women came to save some of the problems of nobody working in factories, and they had to become much more functional. Yes. And then the victory election. Well, yes. And when everything changed, and it was post-war austerity, dawn of recovery, nationalisation.
Yes.
I think you wouldn't think, in theory, to put all that in the lap of an 8-year-old.
No.
But they did, and they took it on board. Yeah. They were. Yeah. I mean, we now know, because they're all middle-aged people talking sense.
Brian Truman, who wrote for Cosgrove Hall Films, Danger Mouse and Chortle and the Wheelies and things like that, he always says that the way he always treated kids when it was came to writing was he'd basically throw the smarties as high as possible and see if they could catch them, as opposed to talking down to them.
Absolutely.
One thing that comes out of this for me, just for example, the politics of this and the First World War and whatever, I don't think I'd have known that before the Labour Party existed, there was the Liberal Party.
Right.
I didn't realise that, most people, I don't think, knew those kind of things. And I'm sure there's a whole generation of people growing up don't know the political history. And yet it comes out in these, subtly. It's there, subtly there.
They're all talking about things that affect them. It's immediate effect. If the law is bent towards their need, lovely. Yeah. If it's being stripped away from them in some way, they're losing ground, they want to change. Yeah. And I think the dawn of recovery, nationalisation, the welfare state, the family car, Festival of Britain, you have this tilt in the series. Between September and December, it's pretty grim. It gets worse.
Yes.
But after Christmas, you come back to school and the life of this family gets easier because of things like family car. Good gracious, we got our own car.
Big thing. Very big thing.
Festival of Britain. Yeah, we can have a big event. Yeah. And a new age.
They weren't individual episodes in the sense there was a bit of a serial part to it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, because they had, it depends on how old the characters were, and I had to work all that out before I even started. Yeah. So there'd be crucial stories to tell at certain points in the two-term soap opera, if you like. And there had to be somebody the right age, for instance, a teenage daughter, to fall in love with the GI. And then she was off to America.
Yes.
So that was one of those things you had to plan right from the beginning.
Did you do it sort of year by year, as it were? Each episode was a different year, or
yes,
was it?
It was generally in that same as an enclosed time space. Because often I'd have to sort of soften the angle on a character who was about to be changed for an older version.
Yeah, I was just thinking the aging process is important.
It was handled very well in the early days, particularly. They were very careful, a very good casting director, and she managed to get lookalikes.
And that brings us on to the topic of the people who starred in it.
Yes.
I mean, there was a lot of people who cut their teeth in How We Used to Live, wasn't there?
Oh, yes.
And there were also a few others who were bigger names as well, who were in How We Used to Live. You know, Diana Davis and people like that.
Yes.
Just tell us a little bit about the kind of people who came through the ranks.
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there.
Look,
we all artists, man. We go, you feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gotta lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit seriously.
I think I mentioned Joanne Whalley when she was able to play that big time. I mean, she was the one we didn't have to replace. She could be a 28-year-old Victorian Missy. She was getting married at the end of it. There was quite a lot of young actors who I think vanished to finish their education. And then I kept seeing them coming back with quite a gap behind in years, but they came back into Emmerdale Farm. And I thought, yes.
Diana Davis was in Emmerdale Farm.
Absolutely, yes. And Eileen O'Brien, do you know her? She played one of the mums. It was always quite sad if we had to change face for any sad reason because somebody wasn't available. But we tried to get to look alike. There was one very jarring transfer from one series to the next when they were all different. And I think it would have disappointed children to if they were looking forward to the next one to see that all their favourite family had changed.
Yes.
MIM presents Young and Cool, A Brief History of Country.
If I was listening to a song that I could relate to, I'd listen to that song constantly.
An hour-long special exploring the resurgence of country among the young people of Ireland.
What for you defines country music?
Is to tell the story. It's three chords and the truth.
It's almost like therapy.
We've got young and old there and everybody just loving the exact same type of music. That shows what country music's all about and people were just loving life.
Kerry McIlroy explores the roots while meeting with some of the biggest young stars of country, like Nathan Carter.
Country is one of the biggest genres in the world, but it's no longer what it used to be, do you know what I mean? It sounds now very hip-hop. I don't know how you can define country anymore, really.
We just try to make it so that people can like relate it to themselves.
Country music didn't have limitations, so whenever I was writing my songs, I didn't see any kind of barriers to what it had to be.
Available to listen now at planetradio.co.uk/downtowncountry.
Drama. Fresh and original.
We're not here to cause damage. We just want a hearing to be heard like any citizen of this country.
Distinct Drama presents Sylvia.
Men working in the same factory have time for lunch simply because they are men.
Written by Leslie Strachan and directed by Colin Guthrie.
You have no voice here. Only the father has the right to ask.
Distinct Drama presents a powerful exploration of the relationship between the Pankhurst sisters.
We will not bargain for the vote. Burn, maybe. Not bargain.
A Leslie Strachan production.
Your hunger strikes are not for nothing. We will not be eclipsed by who my sister is sleeping with.
Available to listen now. Search for Distinct Drama wherever you get your podcasts. Or go to distinctnostalgia.com.
Christabel is losing the membership.
Militancy surrounds us. The government is running scared. That is the opportunity.
How can you be so blind?
So how did you set about writing these then? I mean, there were you, you know, 1968, sort of thrust into this to an extent. Every era is different. You say you drew from your own personal knowledge to an extent, but it's quite a task, isn't it? Being able to tell the story of all these years.
Yes, there was an expert. I mean, several experts. Peter Scroggs was managing the department anyway, and he was very, very supportive and liked to hear the ideas as they were being born. The first director for the first two series was Richard Hanford, and also we had a historical advisor, Norman Longmate, who wasn't all that into drama and television and script writing, but he'd done wonderful sort of studies of period books about life in Britain. And he was the most encouraging historical advisor you could hope for. And he would have good ideas, sometimes things that I wouldn't have thought of. But I think the ending of it was much more sort of choppy because we'd had to fit in with the national curriculum.
Yeah.
And so that's when you did mini biogs.
Now, you were working at Yorkshire Television, mm-hmm. which in the 1970s and 80s was a huge creative hub in the UK. There was lots going on there, from great comedies like Rising Damp and Only When I Laugh, etc. Obviously, Emmerdale, which is still filmed at Kirkstall Road. This was, I mean, everyone says it, it's a bit of a cliche, really, but you were working in the golden age of television, weren't you?
Absolutely. I don't think I dropped out, actually, by about 89. I was thinking, this is not exactly what I hoped it might become. So I started a touring repertory company and wrote plays, and they took them round to, obviously it wasn't a big enough company to be very special, but it was a jolly good company of people I'd worked with and were able to do plays of I'd written, and also other classics and crowd pleasers, and go to places that couldn't afford to get the National Theatre or the Royal Shakespeare touring that way, but they would have us. We did our best.
What was it about working at Yorkshire Television that was special then?
Well, the people, the talent, and the fact that people went for it. They just said, they didn't really make mountains out of molehills. I created a mountain, they climbed it. And there was this wonderful attitude of people not being snobby. There was very little of that sort of... Occasionally, if you wrote a main play, which was going to feature settled stars, you know, you could feel that they would be a little bit distant in the canteen from the extras. But this lot were completely good old. I invented the town, Bradley. It was Bradford and Leeds mixed together. And everybody in How We Used to Live lived in Bradley. And they weren't snobby. And the actors weren't snobby. And they got on with it. And they were great fun. And I'm still friends with quite a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that the other thing that was probably missing, which is quite a big thing today in the media, is that you didn't have the same kind of systems and process and bureaucracy that's dealt with these days?
Oh, I don't think I could cope these days at all. I wouldn't know what I was talking about. It used to be a kind of people come to chase you around and say, oh, can you do this? I've heard about what you do and I've seen what you do and I'd like you to do this for me. I think it was one of those nice moments when a play of mine had gone out that Yorkshire Television produced. And I think the next morning somebody rang up from London and said, would you like to come and write a play for me? It was John Bowen, actually, who said he was working for London Weekend or Thames, I can't remember. And he said, you haven't time to write your favourite idea. I want a play that's featuring your second favourite idea because you haven't got time to write your first favourite. So I did that. And
what was that?
Which we was now, so many.
And of course, Yorkshire, as we say, was this hotbed of creativity, and there's some very popular programmes were made there. How was How We Used to Live seen within the ranks of Yorkshire Television? I mean, were people like Richard Whiteley and others aware of How We Used to Live?
Richard Whiteley would always nudge against me. We have a drink in the bar together. It was very nice about it. But I think How We Used to Live was everybody's godchild, and sitting round just having, in the canteen, they would want to know what was happening. I think with a certain amount of nostalgia, because we're talking about people's youth sometimes, and they wanted to know I got it right. Now, it was a good atmosphere. I feel sad going past that where it was. It was so much going on there. You'd never have a dull moment, really.
I mean, luckily, it's actually one of the few ITV buildings that's still in existence, oh, yes, isn't it? Yes, most of them have been bulldozed down, haven't they?
Yes, this one still holds up.
Obviously, you had Emmerdale being produced there from 1972 onwards with Kevin Lafe and, of course, created Emmerdale. Was there much connection between you and them?
Not really. I did write some, but I just filled in when they wanted me. But I was actually usually too busy.
So you wrote some episodes of Emmerdale?
Oh, yes, and Heartbeat and... Yeah. I think it was just one of those things that I loved being there, and I knew my way around, and it was a good job.
And what was it like writing for Emmerdale? I mean, it's an institution, isn't it?
It was Emmerdale Farm when I wrote for it. It was Annie Sugden, and yes, it was good. It was very good. We didn't have much problem getting that motoring. It had some good cast and good storylines.
Did you have much to do with Kevin Lathan himself? Because he was apparently a hard stickler for Emmerdale's roots, wasn't he? And
I think perhaps I kept closely to them, so I didn't have any problems. No. I did believe in it. I thought it was a very good series.
Yeah.
I thought Heartbeat was very good too.
Yeah. So do you think... I mean, I think there's a space for How We Used to Live today, because I don't think there is anything that's aimed at kids. I mean, you've got horrible histories and things like that. But there's nothing aimed at kids in a sort of intelligent way when it comes to history. Do you think it could come back?
I think it would be interesting to try. We've got some interesting decades to cover anyway. That we did stop in 1970. I mean, that was, as far as I was concerned, 1970 was the end of what you call history. We're in the present.
Well, now, of course, we're coming up to 50 years since 1970.
Absolutely. I know.
I mean, there have been quite a few programmes, obviously, since then on mainstream TV. There's lots of programmes that do try and reenact history and all the rest of it. Yeah, some of them are quite good, some of them not too bad, period dramas and whatever. But there was something about How We Used to Live for me that was quite raw in a way.
Yes.
I'm not saying it wasn't good, I think it was very good, but it didn't feel overly polished either. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it really wasn't meant to. Anyway, you had to cope with the crew, didn't you? I mean, there was one particular shot I remember. It was very sentimental. The second series was Victorians, 1874 to 1887, I think. And 1874, there was a lad called Edmund. He was a doctor's son and he was a teenager. He was going to start the whole series off by sliding down the banister and calling something out to his young sister, waiting below. She was only 12 at the time, but she grew up to be 28 in the series. But he was not ready for what happened, because we hadn't just got this wonderful, jolly, cosy atmosphere going. There was something also called industrial action. People suddenly called strikes for no apparent reason. And we had spent most of the previous day in this Victorian house, propping it, getting it to look like the home of a doctor and his family. Mm. And most of the rooms were sealed off because they weren't needed yet, so we hadn't done them.
Are you talking about the big strike of 1979, the ITV strike? Is that what you're talking about?
I could be. And the boy playing Edmund flung his leg over the banister, all out, and the whole thing went on strike. I said, are you going to sit there now for the next 2 months? No, it did actually. I think it was only about a 3-day thing.
Yeah.
And they did sort of apologise. Yes. And everybody got ice creams. But it was a very strange start to a long project we've been working on for months.
Now, I know there's been calls for How We Used to Live to be repeated on certain television channels, like Talking Pictures and others. Fans are saying they'd love to see it again.
Oh, good.
How do you feel about that?
I'd love it. Well, I watched, after you say you'd like to come and have a chat, I thought I'd better watch a few because I haven't seen them for ages. And I was quite enjoying it. And I have to say, one or two bits, I don't remember writing at all. But I remember the stories and the characters. Sometimes I remember the good bits, particularly where some actor had just pulled a rabbit out of a hat and done something brilliant with the line. They were very good and they didn't know how good they were.
Now, they weren't risque. There was nothing risque about them. But do you think if we were doing them again now, there'd be certain aspects that we weren't allowed to talk about? You did tackle serious issues, social issues.
Yes, yes.
Would that be a problem now, do you think? Because, you know, we're in a different age where everyone's sensitive, extra sensitive about everything, aren't they?
I don't think there's anything that's going to tread on people's corns too much. The big joke always, before I went to work on it, was the presenter in beautiful twin set and pearls getting into the bath and saying this is how Victorians took a bath. And I know that for several different series, I did put in a bath scene where Ma had the bucket and the boy was in the tub in the cellar and they had baths, proper baths, with no clothes on. And as far as I know, it didn't cause any rumpus then and it certainly probably wouldn't now. But as long as the atmosphere's right. Yes, for the suffragettes. We had a little model shop. Beautiful little model shop. The director begged, he said, please may I be the one to fire the air gun at it. And so there was this sort of, we all queued up and watched him, and this little model was all lit and ready, and it was completely content in the room, and he banged this pellet at it, and the window shattered. And then the next, it cut away immediately to this girl being arrested for having made a suffragette demonstration. So, I mean, of course we did things that were controversial.
Did you cover, because we've just done a series recently about the 1918-1919 flu pandemic, get included in any of the episodes, do you know?
Yes, I think it did.
More people died in that than the First World War.
I know. I think there was one of the characters we lost in that one, sadly. One of the series that had the First World War in, we had September to Christmas with this one family in the house, but we kept the house and we lost the family over the Christmas holidays. Another family had moved in. And I don't think we were able to do anything about flu then, but we did another one.
And you know, so just thinking about the way in which it was made, you know, obviously this was a children's programme or a school's programme, but a lot of money was put into it by Yorkshire Television,
yes,
wasn't it? You know, it was very authentic, the clothes, the settings.
Yeah, nearly all on location. There's hardly a studio used at all. I don't think there was a studio to anywhere. It's all location.
Yeah, absolutely. But the care and attention that was put in by the entire crew in order to make these programmes look authentic for the kids. Tell us about that.
Well, I just think people were determined to make the best for this programme because they liked it themselves. I mean, quite a lot of people who worked at Yorkshire Television had children who watched it, and we watched it with them. You soon could get it on videotape, you know, and you could put your tape in and keep it and watch it when you're all together or when Grandma was over and she would remember all about it. As I say, many of them felt they were like godparents to it. Mm. And so they would adopt and give the best of what they had, which was magnificent. I don't remember anybody feeling cheese off it. Quite often, it was good having working class characters because it didn't matter if the clothes didn't fit. I know when it came to having a lot of extras, there was a whole rack of clothing of different colours and sizes and shapes, and the wardrobe would go through it with what would you like to wear? You're a little poor boy. Oh, right, well, you wear those trousers and that shirt. And it doesn't matter that they don't look as if they match. So we had some very good, colourful, realistic, historical get-ups with people who, you know, were wardrobed by necessity, not by choice.
So the other thing you just mentioned there about, you know, people could sit down and watch it with grandparents, when grandma and granddad would know everything about it and whatever, and that would instill that sort of connection between the kids and the grandparents. Mm. And that's what I always used to love about seeing grandparents, because you enjoyed listening to those stories and things. It strikes me today we've lost a bit of that, a little bit, in terms of that connection. Everyone seems to be obsessed in the media now with what I called age ghettos. Yes, that if you're over, if you're 30 to 40, you must be into this. If you're under 20, you must be into this. If you're over 70, you must be into this.
Yeah.
And never the twain will meet. That's kind of thing.
Fantastic phrase. I must remember that. The age ghetto. Yes, I know. I find it very difficult sometimes because I forget how old I am. No. And also, I think it's lovely to have people of all ages to be friends, because why cheat on or risk losing out on a friendship because somebody's 2 decades short, younger or older?
Yeah. And through the process of how we used to live, did you see grandparents and children, liaising and talking?
Well, that's what I did myself when I was quite active. 7, 8 year old with a fairy cycle, we used to call them, and I could ride my little fairy cycle to my grandma's. You see, half the problem is people don't always live near.
Yes.
And if they go out alone, it's dangerous, perhaps.
Yeah.
But where I lived, it was very easy to go and see my grandma at a drop of a hat if I felt like it.
Yeah.
I was very lucky, and we could trundle around and see our relatives very easily, and we all went to the same church and played games on bank holidays. It was very nice upbringing. I tried to get some of that in that period. Which, I mean, it didn't belong to all the periods.
No.
It was just the one particular stretch. And of course, it did take in the Second World War.
Yes.
I could remember all that.
Yes.
And having a GI to stay and my daddy having to go off with an ARP helmet on and rationing. Oh, Friday, every alternate Friday, 2 ounces of sweets. Yeah. Oh, boy.
But the writing wasn't just factual. You weren't just dealing with facts. Mm. These were characters you created. So when you watch them, they have their little nuances. They have little personalities and things like that. How easy was it to weave that into the process?
Well, nobody stopped me. Nobody tried to stop me. I think it's just because I could listen to them and never wanted to say, well, this is a subject to be broached. Well, how would so-and-so, this character, broach it? And how would this character resist it or turn a deaf ear or want to have something better to think of? And they did grow on me. I did get to know them quite well. Yeah. And they were all, I suppose, jigsaws of other people that I put together in a different way.
Obviously, you said you sat there cross-legged watching it with the rest of us every now and again. Do you remember how it all started? In terms of when you'd sit there, because we used to sit there and there'd be a clock on the telly with the little digits going past. That used to take forever watching thing going past.
Yes.
And then suddenly the Yorkshire TV...
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, got to do that again.
Dun, 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 dun.
Which means...
Oh, it's going to start any minute. Bum, 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 bum.
But do you know what dum, 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 dum is?
Well, you see, I've forgotten now.
Ilkley Morbata.
Of course it is, yes. I knew it had some significance.
And so it was dum, 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 Yorkshire TV, and then the programme would start. Mm-hmm. And what, you remember the theme tune?
I do, I can't sing it.
Go on, I'll go.
Dee, 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 dee.
And it was the same theme tune all throughout the series, wasn't it?
I think they played about with it a bit, little variants and variant arrangements of it. But yes.
But you also had the sundial with the image, wasn't it?
That was more or less replicated, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It was there a reason for that in particular?
No, I think you just felt time was moving on in a gentle pace and we just stick with it.
Yeah, fabulous. So now, many years later, you've made Yorkshire your home.
It seems like it.
And that's directly because of how I used to live, really, isn't it?
It's because I hadn't time to do anything else except write for the next episode. No, it was good. It was a very, very, very good decision.
Have you kept in touch with many people then that you worked with on how I used to live?
Yes, a few. I mean, certainly Richard, who's the director, we did our first 2 long series together. And I think he and I, with Norman, established and Peter Scroggs just... what we dared to do and what we could afford to have done. And I think the fact that it did bowl us over, rather. I suspect really that would be the most definitive movement in terms of establishing what How We Used to Live could be. Mm. I don't think we changed it much after that.
No.
With different directors coming on board and different producers and obviously recasting sometimes and different periods. But it was the basic... crew and the fact that there were just to start with quite a small number of us, we had time to meet, clear things, have priorities, get on with it, and find the talent.
So, this is a cliche, I know, but did it change your life?
Yes. I didn't expect, well, one moment that's what I would be doing, that I would write history. I mean, if someone had told me when I was 16 about to not do it for GCSE, GCE in those days, I would never have believed that I'd be writing history for children to, you know, learn from. Mm. I don't think actually in those days there was much to learn from television anyway. The television was a bit of a treat and you just saw the coronation if you were lucky.
How did it influence your career, do you think, working How We Used to Live?
Well, actually, according to my agent, not very well. Because I was, you know, sort of pinpointed into being children's historic drama, educational.
You were stereotyped, basically.
Absolutely. And it, my agents were saying, get out of it, get out of it, you know. And I thought, well, I'll do you the odd one-off play. Shut up. I enjoy myself. I think the plays were something that was still going to get done anyway. Yeah. If they were worth it, yeah. And if they weren't worth it, well, you know, it doesn't matter. But yeah. I certainly felt it was worth it to do it. I enjoyed doing it, and it's a wonderful team to work with. I mean, there was for the producer, directors, and it was just and the general atmosphere, and the fact that they would support it as yeah. being something as a bit of a breakthrough. Nobody else was doing it. Yeah.
So it was treated seriously, wasn't it? It was a schools programme, but it was serious.
It was treated seriously, and yet it made everybody laugh sometimes. I think it was lovely to be part of something that hadn't been done before.
Yes. Well, I can tell you, as somebody who watched it as a kid, 8, 9, 10-year-old, that it certainly had an impact on my life and has left an impact on my life in terms of history, my knowledge of things. And I know it has on many, many other children of my age.
Yes.
So, you know, you can feel very proud of your achievements.
I feel delighted to. I wish I knew them all because I made some very good friends by pen friends writing to tell me about what I think I had. Oh, a big challenge. Because I had a lovely holiday in Sark that I've been looking forward to for a long time. I think it was 1960. I wanted to go to Sark. And I got these letters later on because I went in visiting the school, as you do. But later on, I got letters from the children saying it wasn't like that for us. And they then told me what it was like when they were occupied. And so I went back and I was able to see some of them and sit in the classroom with them, tell me what it was like for them. And it was not like it was on the mainland. So Channel Islands had a different story to tell. And
Well, you see, how we let's start again. Let's do some more. I think we should bring it back, definitely.
Right, OK. I'd like to go to start for 6 months and write it.
Thank you very much indeed for talking to us, Frieda. It's been lovely.
Distinct Nostalgia is produced by MIM. And you can hear lots more programmes via the Distinct Nostalgia player. There's Hartley Hare and a Pipkins reunion.
So, Hartley, nice yes, to meet you. Can I shake your paw?
You can shake
paw?
My hand, yes.
Is it a paw
well,
or a
it's
hand?
A paw, really. It's a paw. I call it a hand.
I remember you going to the dentist.
Oh, yes, I went to the dentist once.
And you weren't very happy about it,
no,
were
I wasn't
you?
Very happy about it. I hated it.
Corrie and Carry On star Amanda Barry remembers being a children's TV presenter in the 70s.
Because it was live, they were always either overrunning or underrunning, so there were mad people waving at you. Mm. I remember one day we were really underrunning, so I hopped on the wall and walked along. Oh, I got in such trouble. They said, you are teaching children to walk on walls.
We're back in Hartley to meet the original female inspectors from Juliet Bravo.
So when you come to do any filming, you've got this skirt on and this jacket. And the coat was cold. The hat, the first hat we wore wasn't reinforced. It wasn't a helmet. And I had a handbag. No pockets. There wasn't a single pocket in my jacket. I mean, talk about ill-equipped.
And there's even an appearance from Gonzo in our great Muppets reunion.
Dr. Gutnick works on me. I've had my nose lifted. I've had, you know, everything fixed. Everything's been lifted.
These programs and many more are all available now at distinctnostalgia.com. Get in touch via the Contact Us page on the website. Bye for now.
Distinct Nostalgia is brought to you in partnership with Life Rooms and Mersey Care NHS Foundation Trust. We've lots of activities for you to do at home at liferooms.org. Staying well, staying home.